When it comes to isolinium, a little goes a long way. President Tarina suggests a walk or a shared meal between friends to ease Saru's troubled mind. And Lieutenant Nan has returned to the USS Discovery. Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Seventh Rule with Sirach Lofton.
Hello, hello.
My name is Ryan T. Huss. Today, we're doing a review of Discovery Season 4, Episode 9, Rubicon, with very special guest, Rachel and Cheryl, all the way out from Toronto.
You betcha. Do you want some snow? I can send it to you. We have 8 inches coming in tonight.
Please. We haven't had 8 inches in our lifetimes. Out in LA.
Cheryl. Yeah. Oh, so you're coming from Toronto. I noticed the Canadian...
A boat.
Some of my favorite people, by the way, Canadians. I lived in Toronto for a while.
Some of my best friends are Torontans.
Yeah. No, I lived in Ontario. I was in Toronto, and I thought the people there were so nice and won me over. So shout out to T.O.
Yes. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Have you been to the East Coast? They're even nicer. No.
I've been to Toronto. I think it was in Ottawa. I've been to a few places. I haven't been to everywhere though. There's more to see.
Yeah, the East Coast puts us to shame. They I think are the nicest Canadians ever.
Wow.
Let's go.
Just so you know. Yeah. And okay, I do not work for the East Coast Tourism Board. I do not, but
yeah, no, the people there are just so sweet, just warm people. Everybody's friendly, and just the vibe there. I was like, wow, everybody here is. We'll say hello when you say hello. There's like this. It's just like a good feeling. So I was happy to be immersed in the Canadian people and culture.
You were shooting up there, weren't you? It was on a show when you're up there, Sirach. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was working for Showtime. We were part of the original. In 2000, that's when the show business in Hollywood started to move productions into Canada for budget purposes, and say, you know, we can get more money for our dollar, because I think it was a 3-to-2 kind of ratio or something. So you got like more money. More value out of a dollar. So a lot of people at that time were moving and doing productions there. And we caught a little bit of backlash because people were starting to say, oh, you American actors are, you know, going to Canada, leaving behind jobs here in Hollywood. And, you know, it was a little bit of a controversy behind that. But then, you know, now it's just an everyday thing for productions to be all over the place.
Right. International. Yeah. But now, here's the thing, Rachel. We've been, these were a lot of pleasantries we just threw about for the last 3 or 4 minutes. But now I just want to get into it. Lieutenant Nan was one of my favorite characters, and I was really annoyed and hurt.
Thank you.
When she left in season 3. So I was very happy to see you back. And Discovery has this fun game they like to play, which is, look at this really cool character that you like. Okay, now they're gone. They did that with Commander Landry. They did that with Arium. They did it with Culber, brought him back. They did it with you, brought you back.
And Tilly. They've just done it with Tilly as well.
Right. Mm-hmm. So welcome back, Rachel. It's really cool to see you again. I know the fans are very happy about that. How did you feel when you came? Did you just kind of get like the call? Or did you expect that you were coming back at some point already?
I didn't know, to be honest with you. I think, leaving the show is how do I open this can of fish? I think...
we say can of worms. This is can of, such a language
can of fish,
barrier, you guys.
Tuna. I probably messed that up. But how do I open this Pandora's box? Maybe that's the more appropriate thing. I think with this show, as you both probably already know, I wasn't supposed to be around for as long as I was. My deal was that I was the red shirt and I was coming on board, and I was only supposed to be around maybe 2 or 3 episodes. And then I left and I went to a different sci-fi show called Killjoys. And I did about 9 episodes with them. And Trek had called during the time I was on the other show. And they said, well, we'd like for you to come back. And like, amazing. And then I went back. And then I didn't even know what was going to happen with this character. A little clue, I guess, I had was when Pike says, well, Commander Nahn has requested to stay on board. And, you know, and I say, well, if I can be of use or whatever that line was. Mm-hmm. And then I was sort of like, oh, okay. So they've put me in this, they took away my red shirt. And I think I could be the only red shirt in Star Trek history that's like, where's my red shirt? but I really wanted that back. And then they put me in the blue and then they said this. So I thought, oh, okay, they want me around for a bit. And, you know, and that's a real honor. And I love this group of people. I absolutely mm-hmm. love them. But, you know, as you know, with Trek, there are long days, and there were some other things that I also wanted to pursue. So, you know, I don't know if I should say this, but I think more or less it was my fault that Nahn didn't come back. So, and left the way that she did. I'm probably now going to get a whole bunch of people writing on my social media, like, damn you, we don't care anymore about you. but I can't just leave the fault on, you know, I don't know the deal with other characters, yeah. but I can't leave the fault on the powers that be, because they have been so good to me. And it's always an honor to come back. And this was great to, you know, I went and did another show, and then, you know, a great little Canadian show, and it was terrific. And then when they wanted me to come back for this, and they gave the call and said, hey, we want you to come back, I was really honored. And also that they didn't kill me off. I mean, they could have had someone do me in.
It meant that they were hoping you would come back.
Yeah, maybe. I hope so. I guess so. Yeah, but either way, what an honor. And it's so nice to see the family again. So even that bridge photo I put up, I mean, I was just, I cannot tell you both. I am such a hugger. I'm sure when I meet you both one day in person, I'm going to be like, oh, give me a hug, because that's how I am. And it was so hard not to be able, because we were obviously dealing with the pandemic. Yeah. So to not be able to hug everyone was tough. There was a few close calls where I was like, hey, okay.
Yeah. Okay, Sirach, yeah. I know you have a million things to say, but just real quick, when I'm looking just at your face right now, Rachel.
Yeah.
My goodness, Star Trek fans, wouldn't she play a perfect Betazoid? You look like, I don't know if you watched Star Trek beforehand, but you'd be a great Betazoid. Anyway.
Okay, so are you going to write that in and let them know?
Yeah. Don't yeah. listen to Ryan. That's his pickup line for everybody.
That's how Sirach and I met 9 years ago.
He like, said the same.
Anybody
thing
ever
to
tell
me.
You you'd make a great Betazoid? He's like, tell me more.
Tell me.
I wanted to say, Rachel, obviously, you know, or maybe not obviously, but obviously to me, the camera loves your face, right? I think this is just a fact. And you have such presence on screen. These are my observations. And one of the things that I really enjoy is the gravitas of your character. You have so much, you know, like you look like a formidable person, like somebody who can challenge any one of the characters. And in particularly in this one, you're the one who's, you know, there to match Burnham's energy, or even have to sometimes outrank her or make a decision that might trump hers. So they clearly understand that you have that kind of power and presence in you and who you are. And my question is, what kind of mindset do you put yourself in order to get that kind of presence?
I don't know.
When you're doing Nahn, like what is your thing that you're centralizing your performance around? You know, like I'm gonna be tough. I'm gonna you know, because there's a lot, there's a layered thing. And, you know, we certainly got into your family history in this one a little bit. It became emotional. But I also see a strength and toughness. And I want to know where that kind of emanates from.
I think that came, to be honest with you, right from the very start, from the first episode. I mean, coming on board with Pike, you know, he's bringing two officers with him on board. So it's right from the very beginning was, yes, sir, following orders, sir. Yes, sir, we're going here. You know, like she's very rules and mm-hmm. obedience. And here's a little tidbit. You both may or may not know this, but my first career of choice actually was to become a police officer. So there could be some of that.
There it is.
That's in there. Yeah. But then I'm sure you can tell with talking to me, I am not serious at all. I'm a bit of a joker and I laugh all the time. So I guess.
So wait, you're saying that if you ended up being a police officer, after you asked them, do you know how fast you were going? You'd be like, what's this behind your ear? Whoa, it's a ticket. There you go, buddy. Have fun. See you around.
Would that not make your day, though, if a police officer did that to you? I mean, you'd be like, it sucks. I get this ticket.
Yeah. That's how I want to get a ticket.
Yes. Brighten your day, too. I mean, come on. But I wanted to work. The whole goal with that was because I am such an animal lover and grew up in the country with horses and big dogs. And also a love of people. So the police force for me, that was a way to combine two loves of being, you know, working with canines, working mounted unit and mounted unit specifically. I mean, yes, we see it used in other ways, but what I really loved about mounted unit was that it was a chance to go into communities and have an animal who kids and people love horses, right? And to break that barrier between this rigidity that people see in police officers and have like an open dialogue and have good community relations. I think that is so important. So really that's what my goal was. But for Non, I think I just rested on the laurels of whatever it was that I brought in those first couple of episodes with Pike. And then before I knew it, I was doing away missions and I was like, okay, I'm the backup. So I guess that's it. Is that fair? I don't know.
Extremely fair. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's tough to tell if you're going to be around for the rest of this season or maybe like an off and on kind of thing. It seems like your character played her specific role for this episode and then she's going to disappear again and then hopefully and theoretically reappear. Now that we know that she's back in Starfleet, you know, she's in Starfleet command, so that means even if she's not a member of the Discovery crew, she's in the storyline somewhere. She's back. She's, you know, so I'm sure they'll be able to work you back into the story at some point in some way, hopefully.
Fingers crossed, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everything crossed. Were you a Star Trek? I should have asked this at the beginning. Had you ever watched Star Trek at all before you were cast in this?
Yes, but there's a ginormous gap between what I watched and where I have ended up. So you might have heard this as well. My mom was a huge fan of the original series. So. Nice. When I was growing up, on the weekends, there'd always be the reruns of all the episodes. And so I'd always watch that with her. I'm also a gigantic fan of Lucille Ball. I love her so much. And I'll have to send you a photo. At one point, I was reading the Desi Lu book on set during season 3, I think my last episode. And I took a picture of my chair with Non on it with the Desi Lu book. And I thought, it's the closest I'm ever going to get to working with Lucille Ball. You know what I mean? Yes, I think I was too young to really understand what was going on. I had a huge crush on Spock, not so much Kirk, which is weird. I think, well, maybe not. I think
not
you need
weird.
To cut all of this out.
But I'll cut out my dumb cop joke too while I'm at it.
Okay. So yeah, it's tough because I think I could have continued watching that, but I was just so young. And then, you know, you get busy with sports and then boys and then, you know, doing everything else but watching TV. So there's this huge gap. So yeah.
How was the response? Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I just wanted to finish up on that. Did people in your inner circle go nuts then when you said that you are now cast in Star Trek?
Yes. And I've also had, I think I've been acting for 15 years and I've had people that I haven't seen in like 20 years, 25 years, sending me notes and be like, hey, I think I saw you at Star Trek. My mother, I didn't tell, she was the one I was so excited to tell. And I didn't tell her because I was worried because that, you know what they're like. They say, well, don't, you can't tell anyone. You have to be very quiet. And so I was like, oh, okay. I can't tell my mom. And then I sent her a photo of me in my red shirt thinking, cool. It's like, you know, the Enterprise and my mom will get this. And she was like, oh, this is a nice picture. And I was like, okay. And she's like, I was like, don't you recognize someone? She's like, no. She's like, oh, the red shirt. Is that you? And I was like, my own mother doesn't recognize me. So just.
But then she was happy.
You know, you answered partly my question because, you know, Star Trek has this fan base where everybody's so, you know, in tune with what's happening and they're just up to date. And once they attach themselves to you, they're going to find out as much as they can about you. And I wanted to know what your experience with that was like, because, you know, the fans, you're introduced into the world now. And what has it been like for you to see the kind of embrace and the recognition from so many people now?
I honestly did not think for a second how much Non would be loved. It didn't cross my mind at all. And I remember Anthony Rapp saying to me, well, get ready. You know, people are really going to love your character and, you know, just get ready for it. And I was like, sure. Yeah, okay, whatever. You know, I just standing in the background, being a rule follower. Okay. I am so grateful for the kindness. I have dealt with fandoms before, which have been very tough because I've played the other woman in a show and a couple times. And yes, they can be very fierce. And I had to develop a thick skin very quickly, which I did. So now it's like alligator. So bring it on. But the love from this has been, it's just been overwhelming. And I'm just so grateful. I thank you to everyone. I'm so grateful. Yeah.
So are you going to conventions? Generally, I know it's been a lot tougher the last couple of years with the pandemic and all that, but have you been able to feel that love in person at all lately?
Mostly online, I guess, yeah. is the thing. I am gonna start doing conventions though, which is exciting. I wasn't sure that I was even needed at conventions, to be honest with you, but I'm a real animal and environment lover, and I have some high hopes that one day maybe opening up an animal sanctuary. And right now, a lot of like the autographs that I do, if I get any funds from that, those go right back into helping animals in need. So conventions, I thought, well, you know what, this might be a really great way to be able to do that startup. So I'm probably going to Vegas this fall.
Nice.
And we'll just see. We'll just see what happens. Yeah.
She's gonna, Siroc, can you prepare her for August in Las Vegas? Because it is the coolest thing in the world.
It's gonna be the coolest thing, and you're gonna be a hit. And you know, you get to see in person the people that really love your work and admire what you're doing. So it's nothing but the best. There's nothing bad about it. I haven't been to a convention yet where I've walked away saying, boy, those guys are jerks and they really hate me. It just doesn't happen. It's just, you know, it's not going to happen. But I will say that one of the things that I really like about your character too is there's kind of, I don't know, for me, I feel like there's something about your ethnicity, right? That I feel like reaches out to me and I say, oh, wow, she's, I don't know what she is, but I like it, whatever it is, right? And I wonder, who are some of the people that identify with you and say, oh my God, you know, you represent like me? Is it like which kind of demographic of people do you feel like come out and say, oh, I identify with you because you're like me, and you know, I go through that, you know, I feel like I'm attached to you, or I feel like you embody who I am.
I, to be honest with you, I haven't actually had anyone specifically say that to me, because my ethnicity is ambiguous, which I use to my advantage, I guess, in roles. Mm-hmm. You know, it sort of opens up, it's a wider opportunities, I guess. But I have to mention this because it was such a big part of my career, I guess, because I being an actor, I really want to be able to affect people in a very positive way. So I really, for example, want to do comedy. That's something I really, really want to do, because to get someone to laugh and to take them away from their troubles for 5 seconds is what a gift. And I did this role, the other woman role, but this character was suffering from bipolar, and I learned so much about mental health and what the stigmas and everything around that. And I did this role 8 years ago, 7 years ago, something like that. And I still have people that have connected with me back then, still I communicate with to this day, because they were so impacted in a positive way because they themselves were suffering from bipolar. So to me, that is really important. So whatever the way, if people identify me by race, by a character, by whatever, if I reach them in a positive way, that's better than any award, anything. That's the best gift. So that was a really roundabout way of answering a question.
That's a great answer. And I like the ambiguity of it. I don't think it needs to be defined. I think it should remain kind of undefined, and whoever identifies based on whatever reason they identify. But we also saw a change in your, I guess, gills. Is that what it is, Ryan? Is it gills?
Oh, the breathers. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, 900 years in the future, it's finally like a little Bluetooth thing instead of a whole.
Yeah.
Right.
A whole long one.
Yeah. I like the upgrade.
Do you? And there's been a few, right? I used to always joke with the breathers on. I'd be like, "Thank you for calling Pizza Pizza. What would you like on your pizza?" Like, it was just this joke. It was so fun. It was nice when they came off, I'm not going to lie. Eating stuff like apples became easier. I'm so lucky with those breathers. I mean, I could just pull them off and then Rocky would just stick them back on again. So I was really lucky.
Rocky, we know him. He's been on our show. Great guy, right?
Yeah. Has he? Prosthetics Rocky.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, what an awesome dude. I love that guy. That being in the prosthetics trailer in the morning is one of my favorite parts of the day, aside from cleanup is equally fantastic, getting all the stuff off your face. But Rocky's awesome, that whole team. Rocky, Nicola, Adrian, everybody. I feel like I'm gonna miss names, so I'm gonna zip it, but and Dougie, of course.
Oh, so, Doug Jones. Are we talking Doug Jones?
Everybody's let's talk favorite Doug human. Jones.
Oh my goodness. Goodness gracious.
Yeah.
Actually, didn't you post a picture recently? Or he posted, somebody posted a picture of the two of you. And I was just like, oh, she's in good company. She finds the good people.
Yeah, it was me, myself, and Linus.
David.
Me, Dougie, and David.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. On the stairs. Because the joke was on the third season, when I was leaving, I stood on an apple box so I could give them a hug. And someone took a picture. And this time around, we were standing and there was a set of stairs behind me. So I cheated by going up on like two or three stairs. So, oh, those two who I spent mornings with, right, in prosthetics, was the two of them and the team. So, yeah, they're very special.
We did get a Linus sighting in this episode. He did have a couple lines. I was happy to see him. We haven't seen him too much this season. We love David Benjamin Tomlinson, also a very great fellow. Mm-hmm. So here's something I wanted to ask you, because Star Trek likes to use its technobabble. And I feel like Discovery is like, you know, hold my techno babble, you know, because they're really up in the ante with all the scientific talk. And this episode wasn't too bad with that stuff. I was kind of watching you and the others and seeing how you deal with that. Does it feel like you're just learning a different language completely? Or are you just like memorizing lines is like memorizing lines, and then you just have to figure out a way to deliver it convincingly?
No, totally different language. What? I can't. Some of these words, I was like, I don't even know what this is. And even doing that whole like zoop and then this into here and like that's doing what it in the air. Yes,
you did like a wee. And I was like, how do you feel when you're doing that? Do you just feel so, you're like, really like this? This is okay. I'm going to do this.
Does this work? This works. Okay, this works. Okay, I got it. You know? Yeah, totally. 100%. And even the, I mean, even that one line of Italian that I had when we all were speaking different languages a couple seasons ago. And it's like, even that, I was like, oh God, please don't mess up this line. Please don't mess up this line. You know, like all of those lines. I'm like, yeah, it gives me heart palpitations. Hopefully I never do a medical show. That's what I'm hoping, you know?
Yeah, there'll be a whole lot of that.
Yeah.
I really like the sensitivity of the moment at the end of this episode where you have that scene with Burnham and you essentially say, I reached back to my family and just, you know, I realized that you're my family. And to me, that's like, that was a brilliant writing style, writing concept to kind of bring you back into the fold of the family. And the way you delivered that, I thought had an excellent sensitivity, and it kind of reminded us all of the things that this crew had to give up, and what, you know, the kind of struggles that they're dealing with. So I really enjoyed that performance with you and Burnham at the end of this episode.
Thank you so much.
Said, your line is all or nothing. That's me. You
know? Yeah. Yeah. We should put that on a T-shirt. That'll be the three of us with that T-shirt. All or nothing. That's me.
I'll be nothing. The or. You guys can fight over who's all and who's nothing.
Oh,
you mean all then, in one shirt? Because all or nothing.
No, we can do that in Vegas, right? I get to see you in Vegas.
Nobody wants to wear the nothing shirt. That's the person that loses the bet.
Or you have nothing on the front and then something like...
exactly.
You know, something, I don't know, something on the back or something that's like, just kidding, sucka, or so. I don't know.
We'll do it
just,
for Vegas. I'm convinced.
We'll do it for Vegas. Line them up. Another line that you said that I thought was great, well delivered too, is when Book fires a shot at the station and you look over and you're like, that was an act of aggression.
Yes. Like, yes.
It was like, best it line. Was like, we got to do something. I thought it was the best line of the show, because it was like, hello,
you know, hello,
are we gonna stand here and just let him shoot at us, or,
you know? Dude, I know you love the guy, but like, hello. Yeah totally.
But can we totally. Both agree? I think you even like prefaced it like, you know, we could argue over semantics, but can we both agree that was an act of aggression? Right.
He's shooting at us, Burnham, like. Yeah. Yeah, that's so good. And it's Alan's episode, right? Like, he's such a great writer. Mm. And he wrote my goodbye episode too, I think, in season three. He's so sweet. He's such a... I love working with him. And I loved working with Andy too. I'd never worked with Andy before. And she was such a great director. She was so fun. Mm. And yeah, I really look forward to working with both of them again. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we only have a couple minutes left, actually, Rachel. So just want to point out, first of all, that we really appreciate you taking the time. This was really a good time. We really appreciate you bringing all of your energy and positivity and warmth into the Star Trek world, the Star Trek family, and this show, which needs it, by the way. We need a little bit of positivity. Jeez, we're such negative Nancys. But really,
and Rachel, let me say this too, because this is the honest truth. Since we've been reviewing this show from the beginning, Ryan has been saying, "I really like Nod's character," and he has kept reminding us of this even when you were absent in the show. He's like, "Where's Nod? I like Nod."
Tired of all these other guys.
So he's been rooting for you and pulling for you since the beginning. And I have to give him credit for that. That is his genuine feelings about your character. He has been telling us since the beginning, "Dude, you guys got to watch her. I think she's the best. I love her. I love her character. I love her character." Mm-hmm. So he's probably one of the most excited people to see that you're back in the show. And we're going to get some more of you in the future.
What's the deal, though? He had to convince you that I was worth watching? I mean, what's happening here? He had to really fight.
Yeah, it wasn't much of a fight. It was pretty easy to be convinced.
Well, you know, what sounded like a good thing to say, and thank you for pointing that out, Sirach, that makes every other guest go, "Wait a second." Sirach never said that. All the other times Ryan was blowing smoke up my ass.
No, this time it's actually true.
Oh, I so appreciate it. Thank you, Ryan. Thank you, Sirach. Thank you both.
This has been really great. Thank you, Rachel. And we do hope to see you much more on Star Trek Discovery. And we hope to see you much more on television and movies in general. Also, above all of that, I really hope that you are successful getting your animal stuff going and animal welfare, animal rights, animal sanctuary. That stuff is very important. We can't neglect these other species on our planet, everybody. Do you have any, very quickly before you start your own, do you have any animal organizations that you'd like to promote right now?
Oh my goodness, so many. How do I even start? I really got going with Mercy for Animals. That was the first one is Mercy for Animals. And then I work right now with the Canadian Horse Defense. I'm just learning, and they've been so good to me. Everyone's been so good to me in knowing that what the goals are with potentially starting up a sanctuary. It feels like Mount Everest climbing it right now. I'm in the research stage. I mean, I have something going for me where I grew up in the country with animals, like with horses. And so at least I have some sort of knowledge. I wasn't a city kid my whole life, but they've been really great in helping me out. There's my out. Did you?
Yeah.
Was that very Canadian?
Got it. We got it.
Yeah. We hear it.
I can't change it. You guys, I can't out. How do you do it? Say it.
I say oot.
Out.
Oot. Stop.
No, you don't.
Stop.
It's out. Out. But yeah, out. There's a little extra. Out.
Out. Okay. Out.
She's like, so that doesn't been feel really good. Right.
I'm pretty good with my sorry. And I've never been there instead of been. Mm-hmm. I'm working on it. Let's call it Canadian charm. Okay. So there's so many. I feel like I'm missing a whole bunch of organizations, but
sure.
But they're very important to me. Especially I went vegan, vegetarian, like 5 years ago, and so the more I learn, the more I want to help out.
Whoa, out. She did it!
Yes.
Well, that's awesome. We want to support that as much as possible. Absolutely. And we also, Sirach and I, need to make sure to give a very special thanks to, here comes, Carmen, a.k.a. Skillet, TJ, Skillet? Jackson Bay out in Missouri, Bill Victor Arukin. Check this out.
Arukin.
Yvette Blackman, Homer Freezy out somewhere in New Yeezy, Eve England out in Wales, Dr. Anne-Marie Siegel, Titus Muller, Tim Baum, Darlene Marie, John Mann, Dr. Mohammed Noor, Joe Balsarati, Tierney C. Diekman, Michelle Melendez, Marsha Classic Schreier, Anna Post, Jenna Appleton, Dr. Frank Sobojensky, and especially Dr. Susan V. Gruner. Rachel, this was awesome. Thanks so much. We really hope to see you again.
Thank you, Rachel.
Thank you both very, very much for having me. A real pleasure. I hope I didn't talk your ear off.
Oh, this was great.
No, and it was great.
Everybody at home, stick around for the free-for-all and, you know, go do nice stuff for animals. Become a vegetarian or a vegan or go pet a kitty. And we'll be right back on the seventh rule.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Well, hello there, everybody. Welcome back to the seventh rule with Sirach Lofton, by the way.
Hello, hello.
This is the free for all. Today, joining us, TJ Jackson Bay out in Missouri. We have Melissa Longo wearing a cool shirt made by walkingartmadebymelissa.com. Check it out in the description box below. That's the chat pack, looking good. Dr. Anne-Marie Siegel, I bet she's wearing a shirt.
Yeah, I am wearing a shirt.
You know what I mean. The Ferengi eyes.
Cool Ferengi eyes.
You can get that on in our online store, spring.com. Check it out in the description box below, Ferengi eyes. Looking awesome. We have Anna Post here. Hello, Anna.
Oh.
Best waver in town.
Thanks. Elbow, wrist.
All right. So first things first, TJ, before we hit record, you brought up something that I know I had missed, but we got a little bit more into the history and culture of the Barzan people.
Yes, and I thought it was, you know, very interesting when Commander Nine comes in and the Admiral's explaining why he chose her and why he trusts her. The exposition is that the Barzan way is duty above all. And so that gave us a great expansion into the Barzans. We got some back, you know, on the Seed Ship episode, but before that, all we had was they had a quirky wormhole that actually didn't work. And that was it. That's all we knew about them. And so, you know, it was great to get some expansion on the Barzans and Commander Nine.
Kind of like the Jem'Hadar have like victory is life. Tells you a lot about how they work as a people. And this is just a great way to learn more about the Barzans. Cool. Melissa Longo, what are your thoughts on this episode? Did you love it or what?
Or what? I guess.
That's the answer.
I
choose the alternative.
Anne-Marie Siegel, your thoughts on it? No.
Oops. No, no, I'm going to match your shirt.
She's turning red. She's turning red.
Come back to me.
We'll get back.
Yeah, Clean yourself up. We'll get back to you. Dr. Anne Marie Siegel, I feel like Melissa's arms are even turning red.
It's really warm in here right now.
Anne Marie, your thoughts?
I'm just here for Tarina and Saru.
Yeah, you
are. So into that ship. And I like Dr. Colbert, especially like his relationship, but oh my gosh, I love that like very Data-esque scene where like when Data goes around to the ship asking dating advice. It was so much fun when Saru went to Dr. Colbert to talk to him about his burgeoning relationship. So I had so much fun. I watched that scene like 10 times. I also want to see, like, I want them to cut to Tarina, like, drumming her fingers, like, is Saru going to call me? Like, it's just really cute. I love it. I love it so much.
Oh my God, that's hilarious. on a post, would you also like to see Tarina checking her phone, being like, why isn't he hasn't
respond? I see three dots.
Yeah. And I love the fact that they have one couple where neither of them is human.
Yes.
So often in Trek, like at least one of them is human, but this is two completely different aliens, neither of which are human, that are still finding love with each other. And I like that they did that. And the whole episode, like the B stories of the episode, were almost relationship dynamics. Like you saw the give and take between Book and Burnham, and neither of them wanting to hurt the other, but also believing that they were right. And the dynamic with at the end with Nan and her family, and having to find a middle ground. Like it's a different sort of relationship, but finding that middle ground with your family and how there is gray areas, and it's not always going to be black and white, and you can find a way to be with people without necessarily compromising yourself. And then with Saru and Tarina, like his not quite being sure and his finding middle ground. So it's like three different types of relationships and parallels of finding that balance and working things out, which was kind of nice.
Okay, so with Saru and Tarina, did you guys find the parallel between T'Pol and Trip when he mentioned like they were gonna like sit and meditate together, and we're like, are we gonna get a T'Pol and Trip thing where he's like, all right, time to disrobe?
Well, the other thing I totally love about them too is like, when sometimes certain characters on Star Trek, like who haven't been in a relationship before, dated, they sort of like, you can almost see it in their eyes as the thought of like, this is a possibility occurs to them. And they realize like, wow, I am capable of being like loved in a romantic relationship. And it's just really fun to see Saru sort of like come to that realization. And you almost see like the sparkle in his eye as he realizes it. I love it. It's really beautiful. It gives so much dimension.
Melissa, yeah. Are you composed? You ready to
Yes, I love Saru and Tarina too. And I thought it was wonderful. I love the Zoom, the in-person Zoom thing.
Yeah.
It's so cool where they're like almost touching palms. And I forget that they were not in the same room.
A bit it's of a weird date.
With a few flickers in transmission.
Yeah.
But it was like, they're sharing this full-on moment together when they're completely different spaces, which is kind of amazing. And I love the scene with Saru and Colbert. It was so sweet. So sweet. And Saru is so sweet. And he kind of reminded me a little bit of Odo in his way. We'll see that soon.
My God.
Spoilers.
Mm-hmm.
It was cute. And the way Colbert was really amused by Saru's, you know, curiosity about entering the world of romance. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's so cute.
TJ, did you have any other thoughts on this episode? Out in the holodeck, by the way.
But before I get to that, I want to give a shout out to Wilson Cruz, who plays Dr. Culber. I don't know if any of you have watched The Ready Room yet, but you know, he talks about being a huge advocate for mental health and therapy and counseling. And I just wanted to give a shout out to him for speaking about that and saying that we all need a place to be safe and tell our truths. I so support and identify with that statement that I just wanted to give it a shout out. So yeah,
that's awesome. This awesome
episode is so Star Trek. Like, I appreciate it. Burnham wanting to be candid with her crew and not, you know, not be hiding why Commander Nine is there. And I also appreciated, you know, how in character what Book is doing is for him, because when we first meet him, he's in the business of saving the lives of these trans worms. So he's all about saving lives. He doesn't want to hurt the Discovery crew. He's not really, you know, out there to quote unquote be a bad guy. What he's doing it because he wants to save lives, and also because he's mad it destroyed his planet and his family, but he wants to save it from happening to anybody else. So it's so in line with Book's character. I'm also, you know, hoping we got to see, you know, Commander Reese kind of not agreeing with you know, Rice, Starfleet mission.
He was a little troublemaker twice in there. He was combative.
And so I'm kind of hoping that that's just not, you know, throwaway content from this episode, that comes up again somehow, some way. And I kind of trust the writers to do that. I kind of felt a little bit for Commander Nine. Towards the end, she kind of explains what happened when she went back to Barzan. And that she got to see, you know, the descendants of her family, but she wasn't able to tell them, you know, who she was. And you know, that just kind of makes me feel a little bit sad for her, because she's yearning for that connection to her people. She's, you know, she's able to serve and represent the Barzan planet, but she's not able to make that personal connection back home that I think anybody would want to have. Because she's not able to tell them that she's from the past. That's not common knowledge. And so I kind of feel for her on that. I thought it was funny that Dr. Culber just straight up tells Saru, "You've been an idiot." Like, come on, man. You got to go out with her. And I thought it was funny how coy, you know, Saru was being, Doug Jones, just look into Saru's eyes when he's doing this scenes and my goodness, Doug Jones, hats off.
Yeah.
Last thing I want to mention is, if Sarak leans over for a moment and you look at his screen and Anna's screen, you'll see that they both have their chairs decorated.
Oh. Yeah.
Doesn't everyone do blankets on chairs?
Everybody does that. Yeah.
Excellent observation.
One last thing. And talking about, you know, expanding cultures, we've got a lot of expansion on the Vulcans in this series, 1,000 years later. And, you know, before, you know, we've known that they've given up the, what is it they used to say, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. They've kind of thought a little bit about more about that. But in this episode, you know, we see President Tarina in that scene in Saru's quarters talking about how important feelings are.
Yeah.
And I thought that was an interesting
point.
Yeah. And that's not the first time we've kind of seen, you know, her or other Vulcans kind of, you know, hint towards that in this series. So, you know, I'm interested to see, the continued expansion of the Vulcans and the Romulans, because those are some of my favorite people.
That's a good point. I hadn't even noticed that.
Can you imagine if you went, if you suddenly like went back in time on Earth, like 800 years, like it would be so, the culture would be so different. Like it was, I can't even imagine the culture shock of then.
I've thought about that, and that wouldn't work for me because they wouldn't have contact lenses. So I would be like, seriously, I've thought about that. I'd be like, if I was in, right, if I was, you know, a Neanderthal or even just a thousand years ago, I'd be useless. I'd just get killed, right?
Are there that many Neanderthals in France in 1200?
There still are.
We would not be the survival of the fittest people.
They'd be like, what can you do, dude? Can you knit? I don't know. What can I be like? I could throw logs on the fire. I'll probably hit it.
Can you work with steel? Do you need a bladesmith?
I'm blind.
Can you churn butter?
Churn butter. Siroc, do you have any final thoughts? Yeah. Do you have any final thoughts on this episode? It was a fun one. By the way, you're wearing my favorite Abyssinian kiosk shirt ever. It looks like the Ethiopian design just getting attacked by Wolverine. It's slashing through. It looks superhero vibes. Check it out in the description box below, abyssiniankiosk.com. Siroc's sister does those awesome things. Sorry about that. Please continue.
Thank you. Yeah. My one takeaway was I was like, Wilson Cruz, Colbert, he looks so damn good in that white uniform. Yeah. I was like, his posture is like perfect. And he rocks the hell out of that white, all white outfit. So shout out to Wilson for keeping it together. I thought one of the best lines in this episode was when Stamets was being harassed by Burnham. And she's like, hey, can you do it any faster? And he's like, is there an acceptable answer other than yes? Yeah, and Burnham says no. And he's like, then yes. And I love that. I love that.
I love that too. That was an amazing moment.
Yeah. Yeah, that's Wilson Cruz being a stud.
Well, I think that's why he looks so good in that white uniform, is because he looks good in anything.
Without a uniform.
Nothing.
Yeah, he's kind of in shape a little bit.
I hope I look like that when I'm 75 or whatever he is. I'm just kidding, Wilson. If you're listening, we know you're not 75.
He looks great. I love that exchange. I thought that was a classic Star Trek moment right there, because you always get, I need it faster. You've got 30 minutes. Well, you know, you only got five. That's a constant running theme in Star Trek. And I like the way they kind of made a play on that, where he's like, is there an answer that I can give other than yes? Mm-hmm. And that was a great moment, I thought. Mm. They also mentioned the signal discriminator. And I'm like, what is a signal discriminator? I had to kind of think about that for a second. Because I've been discriminated on. I didn't know if it was an actual machine.
And it's not that great.
Machine that discriminates.
Yeah. We need to destroy this discriminator thing.
Yeah. That's outdated, man.
I can just see Siroc running the mission. He smashes the discriminator. It's like, no discrimination. Oh.
But that's not what, then you shouldn't call it that.
Yeah.
Now we can't get in the ship.
Exactly.
We move past
I felt like the argument between Reese and Bryce was a little short for me. I actually wanted more about it, because he says to him, he says, yeah, Book is going to get locked up for the rest of his life or something to that extent. And the response was like, well, you don't know anything about loss. And I'm like, well, don't they all know about loss? Yeah. Haven't they all literally lost something? True. They all have lost their timeline and their
family. You don't know what it's like to lose everything. But then I thought the same thing. I was like, but he's from the past too, so he lost everything.
Remember,
I think it was a reference to the episode with the prison where he talks. Yeah, he gave a little bit of his own backstory.
Mm-hmm. It feels like they're hanging out in the holodeck together a lot, and they're giving like Major Bashir O'Brien vibes.
Oh my god, they should make them buddies.
Of their conversation, And it sounds like they've been spending a lot of time together and we just don't even know.
And I want to see that. I want to see their
exactly.
I needed more of that.
Yeah.
Let the fight play out for a little bit. Like it was like 10 seconds, 20 seconds. And then it was like, all right, guys, enough of that. Let's get, you know.
Yeah. Well, I thought the same. I thought the same about that, you know, and I know TJ was mentioning that a bit too, saying he wanted to see more. And I want to see it play out in further episodes because you got to, I mean, at least from my point of view, and I think from most fans' point of view, we don't care if somebody becomes more of an antagonist. That doesn't make them like a worse character. That just makes them more interesting. It gives us something more to hang on to. We want to see more of their personality, even if it's in an antagonistic role or it's different from somebody else's. We just want to know more about the characters. And so when they kind of, you know, they got transported back and one of them helped the other one up and they kind of smiled. And I was like, I hope that's not the end of it. I hope it doesn't just like close out like, oh, you helped me up. Oh, well then let's not ever have a disagreement. Let's never have a disagreement. Yeah. I'm like, I hope that doesn't eliminate it. I hope they keep building. I mean, they can argue, they can agree, but just give us more. I like to see more about the characters.
TJ, while you're in that holodeck, can you check and see what games they've been playing together?
Yes.
I
want to
know, like...
Well, we know one of them. If you remember in the was it season three finale when they're locked up and they're doing this kind of Morse code tapping thing to talk to each other. Behind the guard's back, and they kind of figured out.
They've been doing that.
They've got some connection. They do stuff together, and they know this tap language.
That's fun.
I do happen to know that when they have a pool party, they are the chicken fighting champions. That much I know. You know, when one sits on the other person's
shoulders. They're the one team.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
I'm not touching that one.
No.
Is that do those occur in Citation Ops? Yes.
And Saru is a team by himself because he's just tall enough to.
You know, I was noticing that when he was talking to Tarina, too. I was like, wow, there's a mighty height difference between them.
You know, I thought he was initiating this stuff with Tarina in the beginning. I thought he was the one that gave her a flower.
Yeah, some come hither eyes. Yeah.
Wasn't he the one like kind of pursuing her a little bit?
Well, that was a reciprocation, and it was because that I think they shared some tea when they went to Vulcan with Stamets. Mm-hmm. She gave him some Kaminar tea,
right?
Cute
that she had ready for him. So yeah, so she's naughty after that.
All right,
fun scene like. Michael Burnham in the chair actually too, because I've been watching a lot of Voyager lately, and obviously we all love Janeway, but she has to like be so wooden to sort of sometimes like suppress her femininity to be taken seriously as captain. And it's actually really nice to see Michael Burnham not having to do that, and nobody like questions it or thinks she seems like ditzy if she's wearing her hair like in a really cute way. And it's nice to see her like not
her
having
hair
to worry about like she can wear like whatever makeup she wants, and no one's like talking about it behind her back, like sometimes happens in professional, like high powered like women in the workplace. So I'm really enjoying seeing her just being herself and nobody even batting an eye.
Not the 90s anymore.
Yeah. Or 2021.
Or 2022.
I love it.
Excellent points.
Yeah, and actually like the timelessness of the braids, because you know, if you go back in history and you look up like old African traditional cultures and different tribes, you'll find that braiding hair is like thousands of years old. And I'm glad that it's something that they can, you know, they kept with the continuity of. So it's something that they're continue to embrace culturally, because it's something that is significant to the Black culture, braided hair.
Mm-hmm. I mean, even the Egyptians' wigs were braided.
Wonderful.
The Egyptians' what's were braided?
Wigs.
Oh, wigs. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Cool.
I've said that before, Melissa.
Tonight for me. Oh boy. All right. Well, we better run, everybody. This has been a lot of fun. Melissa, TJ, Anne Marie, Anna, this has been fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us for Ciroc Lofton and myself and the great bird in the sky, Mr. Aaron Eisenberg. Thank you all very much for joining us. And until next time, always remember the seventh rule. And next week, we'll all be in braids.